Hello and welcome to the Eat PhD Team podcast, the podcast here to help you with your relationship with food and body by giving you evidence-based techniques to support yourself with a sprinkling of feminism, a dash of dismantling diet culture and a side of vulnerability as we share our own messy lives with you. I'm Emilia, a registered nutritionist and PhD with the sole purpose of making your life happier and healthier. If you love it, please do go wild and share it. And if you're ready for support with our coaching, details are in the show notes. Hello and welcome to episode number 305 of the ET PhD Team podcast with myself and Anna. Hi, Anna, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Thriving. We're currently recording this podcast in the same apartment in separate rooms. I'm actually looking out to a lovely blue ski. So are you? Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
So we're very.
I think we've got the same view.
Yeah, I was thinking you were looking in another direction. I feel very lucky. We've come for a kind of little weekend work retreat, pattern interrupt, both feeling a little blah. And so we've come for a pattern interrupt. We're just still doing our work blocks, but we're interspersing them with a little bit of fresh air instead of hailstones in our face. So we feel very, well, I feel very lucky that we've been able to do that. Mm-hmm. The last minute trip.
Yeah, a little bit of vitamin D goes a long way.
Big bit of vitamin D goes a long way too.
Wow. Yeah.
Just D in general goes a long way, to be frank. I wrote an email this morning to my email subscriber list. If you're not on the list, why, loser? But I was writing about our day yesterday, specifically about me, because life is always about me, as I've said many times before on the podcast, that I had a bit of a bad body image day yesterday. And it's been the first time I've had a bad body image day in a very long time. If you're not on my email list, then you're going to want to be on the email list because I give you exclusive tools to help you manage it, manage mine. It was quite an interesting experience for me because I had a few questionable days in my first trimester, but I could just kind of had other things going on. Although I was in Austin a lot of the time, it wasn't that warm, so I would just, you know, be in my comfortable clothes. And then yesterday, you know, we didn't come home. We couldn't check into our apartment, so we went straight to the city to look around, and all my clothes just felt too tight. We got up crazy early to get a flight, and I was just I was having a really hungry day, and I was hot but cold, but my sports bra was really tight on my boobs, it's pinching into my skin. And then we were taking pictures and I was like, oh, I don't know how to stand. And I realized I don't know how to take up space in my body. It's not like I'm saying I'm really big in my body. Obviously, my body is bigger. Pregnancy, if you don't know. But I definitely am it's like I'm in a new body. And I'm trying to, I wonder what the sensory impact of it is, in the sense of my space in the world is physically different. My perception of that is different. My experience is different. And it's thrown me off. I feel great today. I look fit today. I mean, what I mean is I'm not having a bad body image day, because we know body image is not related specifically to our body size, right? It was all of these things that came together. But I feel moving on this podcast, I'm like, yeah, I don't really have bad body image days anymore. And I don't really. So I feel like when I do, I should own it and be like, yeah, that was a fun experience, even though I'm in a lovely country in Malta and was having a great day and eating great food. And you know, it wasn't an emotional reaction to something. It was just how I felt in my body that day.
But that's what we talk about, though, isn't it? I can certainly relate. There are times where one of my clients has used the term home goblin, and I quite like that, where you just want to be I'm just going to stay inside. I don't need to see anyone. I don't want to see anyone. I certainly have those days where body image, very few and far between, but as you did yesterday, it didn't take up the whole day. It's doing those bits to support yourself. So it's I don't feel great, but I can still crack on.
Yeah, body image flexibility at its finest. Okay, shall we get started on the questions? Do you want to go first?
Sure thing. Since getting married last year, I am shocked how many comments I've received in regards to when am I having babies? I can't believe we're still actually asking people this, but evidently we are. What would you say in this situation? Because it's starting to hit a nerve now, and I don't know how many more times I can laugh it off and change the subject.
Great question. I kind of wish Lynn was here because I feel like she'd have some really sassy comeback. If she ever does a Q&A box, get that in her Q&A box on her story because she will give you some fantastic answers. I'd be inclined to be like, when are you having a baby? Unless if they have a baby, then that doesn't really work. But for some people, it's like, when are you having a baby? Or like, you don't want to. You could make them really uncomfortable and be like, how do you know that I'm not
I
trying?
do.
Yeah, but like, but you could make
Oh
them,
no, you go,
you could be like, how do you know that I'm not trying to have a baby? That would make someone really uncomfortable. It would also probably make them think about, well, maybe I shouldn't have asked that question. Look, you could take the high road, you could take the high road and say, look, this is why I don't appreciate this question. You don't know if I'm trying to have a baby. You don't know what my relationship is like in the sense of, do I ever want to have a baby? I could have fertility struggles, and you could have like an adult to adult serious conversation, or you could just make them really uncomfortable and be like, how do you know I'm not already trying and I'm struggling? But it's not like you don't want to, but it's not, it's hard because you don't, it's a heavy subject and some people really are struggling, so you don't want to be, it's like that hideous like pregnancy on April Fool's Day joke, like it's hideous, you know, people really do struggle, so you
that a
don't.
thing?
Oh yeah, when people pretend to people to be to their partner or whatever that they're pregnant on April Fool's Day, it's awful.
Christ.
Yeah, I think it's dissipated quite a bit. Because of course it can be a hard subject for a lot of people. So you're not trying to make light of that. But I do believe sometimes people just a bit of harshness can make people think about the way that they're doing things. So it's really about what feels comfortable for you, I think, more than anything else. What were you going to say? What do you say?
I often say that I think it's funny you make the assumption I want kids, right? Because, well, I don't, and I don't think that's likely going to change. And also, I sometimes quite enjoy saying, I don't really want to ruin my life. Like, I'm quite happy with how things are. So, like,
Yeah.
obviously, people having kids aren't, just putting that out there, but
Yeah.
like,
Like, it doesn't look that
I
fun to me.
love my life.
Yeah. When I start not enjoying my life, I'll do that.
Yeah, you let me know. Told you.
Yeah, because it's interesting. People like pe sometimes it's so well intentioned, and sometimes it's like people just putting their own stuff onto you, right? I actually did say to a friend the other day, I was like, I know this is not okay to say this, but we were having a conversation about pregnancy and stuff in general. And she knows my intention. And I was like, do you want to have kids? And I thought, I'm not, I said, I don't actually know if that was an okay thing for me to ask. And they don't have to answer. And she was like, oh, no, it's fine. And I thought, interesting. Like that still came out of my mouth. It wasn't like, when are you going to have them? It was like, do you think you might want them? And we're friends. So it felt okay. But then, well, as soon as it said it, I was like, that, I don't know if that was an okay thing to say, which is why I said that. But you know, we're all learning. We're all learning, and not everyone knows that it's sometimes an inappropriate thing to say. Okay. I'm looking to spend a couple of days to a week on a retreat. Are spiritual or emotional cleansing retreats gimmicks?
I don't know what an emotional cleansing retreat is. I don't know if I like the sound of
Sounds
it.
very cult-like, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's the vibe I'm getting. I don't know. I would just be doing. I've been thinking about it. Me and a client were talking about it, about finding like a yoga retreat, and it's a mind field, unless you know people that have been. And I think maybe that's a way of going about it, right? If there are particular ones that you're drawn to, like, okay, great. Has anyone been? Can you look at any reviews? But yeah, those sound quite uncomfortable for me.
The reason it's quite hard is because, like you said, there's such variability. And if something was called, for me, if something was called a spiritual retreat, I probably would avoid it. But and I think that's because I have a bit of a bias towards even the word spiritual. I'm not a, I would say I am a quote unquote spiritual person. But what even is that? But I don't love that word. Spiritual. It feels like a bit marketing gimmicky type of vibe, which I don't love. I think if you're looking to reconnect with yourself and your inner sense of self, maybe a meditation retreat, like a Buddhist meditation retreat, for example, that would be a fantastic way to do that, or a yoga retreat that you've had a recommendation of on potentially would be a fantastic idea. Or if you're looking for a day's event, then come to the ETPHD event next weekend on Saturday the 24th, 7th.
7th.
Saturday the 27th of April 2024. Few tickets remaining. I'll put the link in the show notes. Genuinely though, if you are somebody that likes to do a day thing, then do that. I would err towards something like a recommended yoga retreat or meditation retreat. I think sometimes if you're like traveling, sometimes these can be quite enticing and they might be a nice way to meet people. And but there's such variability. They could be apps, it could be gimmicks, it could be cult-like, it could just be a mix of mindfulness, yoga, vegan food, and time in nature. And that could be a beautiful thing. So they are, I would, if you can get recommendation, do that. But yeah, I would be mindful of it, of and be mindful of gimmicky marketing phrases more than anything else. And look at the credibility of the people running it. Is it an influencer type who, doesn't have any qualifications or experience, but, has likes this kind of whitewash spirituality of manifestation? Or is there some sort of experience or lived experience or qualification? Of the person that's running the retreat.
I have been seeing a lot of posts lately regarding reds and greens supplements and their claim to help boost immune system, lose weight, and fill gaps in diet. Are these actually beneficial to use?
What was a red supplement?
I don't know. I don't know.
I just did a post on this yesterday. That's very strange timing. This is the thread that I did that almost went viral. Yeah, shall we have a little look and see? I was buzzing on the mentoring podcast on Wednesday because threads don't really get a lot of engagement in general. Instagram threads, they're not a big thing. Let me just tell you, 352 likes on my green supplement. Got 48 comments, and half of them were people telling me I was wrong. Just FYI.
Of course.
So that's great. I think it's sad that we've got some good influencer types or business women, especially women. I think it's this. I don't listen to a lot of men, which is probably why it annoys me with more women, because I listen to women. But who are selling these types of supplements now, like green supplements? There was one recently, like a probiotic supplement, and there are time and place where both of these things maybe could be useful. Example, probiotics could be useful after a spell of antibiotics for a couple of weeks, or during antibiotic spell plus a week after might be potentially useful. There are specific strains of probiotic that if you suffer with IBS-C are potentially helpful, or IBS-D are potentially helpful. There are specific strains for traveler's diarrhea, right? But they're not like, take this probiotic every single day and it's going to do something. Greens powders, there's no evidence for at all. But if you are not eating any fruit or vegetables or plant-based foods ever, or maybe you are struggling to eat these foods for a time in your life, maybe you could top up the nutrient density of your diet with potentially a greens powder. Usually they taste like fish. And if you're not eating vegetables, you want to eat a fish tasting supplement. I don't know. But maybe, but also like bioavailability of nutrients when they're all condensed together is potentially negatively impacted by each other. So, you know, certain nutrients inhibit or support absorption of other nutrients. And so that's why it's helpful to get a variety throughout the day over the course of our lifetime. It's one reason why. So I would never recommend them. No. 90% of the 95% of the time I don't recommend them. Also because they're expensive. They're expensive. They're like one of the most famous ones is like that people sponsored a lot of podcasts. It's like £80 a month. That's a lot of money. £20 a week on fish taste. I don't know if this one tastes like fish. I'm not naming it, so it's fine. On fish tasting greens powders. I would really look at why your diet is limited and work on that.
I can assure you this client's diet is not limited.
Okay.
She
So
shares
then.
with me her cooks. They're so varied and delicious sounding.
Okay.
Nothing to worry about. I think it is the gimmicky side of things. Like you see it so often on Instagram, it's hard to avoid.
They're
And
so.
then if they are making these claims for like immune health, well, it's just vitamins from veg and fruit.
And there are so much other things that you can do, you know, so many other things that you can do, like managing your stress, being more mindful, eating more plant-based variety, not this person, obviously, even with plant-based variety, eating potentially more fiber, staying hydrated, moving. Like these things have some evidence behind them. Slightly less evidence, but potentially useful, things like fermented foods. Could potentially be helpful being a little bit mindful of your sweetener consumption. I don't mean taking it out, I just mean being mindful of it. If you're drinking like, you know, 4 liters of Diet Coke a day plus sugar-free gum plus sugar-free something in your coffee plus, and you feel like your digestion is a little bit impacted, maybe be mindful of the consumption of sweeteners. But again, the evidence isn't particularly there for that. But probably more so than for green powders. Okay. Bloating. Is it normal to get more bloated when we used to be in a bigger body but now are in a smaller body? It's like my stomach does everything it can to regain its former size every evening. There's no like physiological reason why you would bloat more in a smaller body versus when you're in a larger body. There are potential physiological reasons in that if you're in a very having a very restrictive diet now, then that can potentially cause bloating if your gut microbiome adapts. And if you've had a very restricted diet for a long time and you eat different types of foods, you might see some bloating in response to that. You might be eating a lot more fiber than you used to, maybe potentially a lot more protein. So these might have an impact. You might be a lot more stressed than you used to be. I'm not saying that's because you're in a smaller body, by the way, but you might be a bit more stressed than you used to be. So that could be having an impact. It might be that you actually notice bloating more than you did when you're in a larger body because one, you're more preoccupied by your body, maybe, or maybe just because of the change shift in body size. It's more visible to you, and so you notice it more. And it could just be a manifestation of body image where, like, that's normal digestion. Like, where most of us feel bloated at the end of the day, or like at least distended in some way because we've got food in our stomachs and we wake up when we don't. So it's less about a shift in body size and more about potentially what's is going on.
Yeah, nothing to add. How not to take the piss when eating out earlier in the day and then let it continue for the whole day?
Not to take the piss whilst you're out and like eating out earlier in the day.
Well, I think it's I'm guessing it's kind of that mindset of, well, I've gone now, so I might as well keep going.
Okay, so what you're explaining is like flexible dietary restraint, which is a really good indication of your of a helpful relationship with food. being able to differently than you kind of normally would in the morning, or maybe eating higher calorie foods or more processed foods, etc., ultra processed foods, etc., in the morning, and then just kind of going, okay, that's fine, I'm going to maybe be more nutrient dense later in the day and not hitting the kind of screw it bucket, so to speak. And that's what we want to cultivate, and we cultivate with ETPC, and I'm sure you're cultivating with Anna. For there's a couple of things. Food neutrality obviously is number one. There's no bad foods, and so if in your head you've still got some lingering things to resolve around, oh, these foods are bad for me or unhealthy for me in some way, that guilt exacerbates the likelihood of you overeating later. So actually working on food neutrality, maybe incorporating these types of foods during the week or at different times or more regularly to remove that those feelings of like heightened feelings of guilt around them, could be really, really helpful. And noticing that nothing happens when you do include these foods, is really helpful. And calling yourself on that internal dialogue that you may have around certain foods, like good or bad foods. And then I like to encourage people to think about, okay, I gifted my body. Like, let's say you had in the morning, there's this place along the road that we obviously, Anna and I, like we walk past, and it does Kinder pancakes. Every time we walk past it, I clock the Kinder pancakes every time. And so for whatever reason, they're in my head. So say I had Kinder pancakes in the morning. They nurtured my pregnant craving for anything sweet and carbohydrate focused at the moment. They nurtured our social time going out for brunch. They nurtured my hunger, right? And then I might encourage people to think, okay, well, how can I gift my body fully for the rest of the day? Things I could do, I could gift my body with a walk after Kinder pancakes. That would be nice, help my digestion, help my insulin sensitivity, these things. Not essential, but nice little gift. And I could gift my body by adding in some vegetables and some fruit and some protein later on in the day, because she hasn't had any vegetables or fruit or protein this morning. So she's a little bit more. So focusing on like how what nourishment would does my body need after eating that this morning, and how can I focus on that? And of course, being super mindful, not going, okay, I've eaten loads this morning, so I need to eat less later. It's not about how can I restrict after eating more calories. It's about how can I re-nourish. And you might find that I think sometimes people get into like, okay, I'm going to restrict for as long as possible and then just have like a small dinner. But then you get really hungry and then you overeat on that dinner. So yes, for sure, like notice your hunger and fullness a little like within this. But don't restrict to the point of like getting really hungry as soon as you eat something, being like, oh my God, I need to eat loads more now.
I think checking in as well, like beforehand, if you know that you're going out at some point in the week, that there's not prior restriction, and moving away from kind of like, need to balance everything out, and make up for it. I think that's really important. And then I would say that, like, if it is, and we're still quite early working together. Like thinking about maybe some pre-planning ahead. Okay, what's the meal after going to look like? What can I, not necessarily, I was going to say, what can I look forward to that's really nourishing? And thinking a little bit about, okay, that I'm mindful of the stories that I'm telling myself because I don't want it to be self-fulfilling prophecy. But also thinking realistically, right, let's also consider food environment and just making sure that I've got fruit on the side. So I'm not, as it may be kind of likely to head for the crisps that are on my mind right now.
Yeah, we've got like tomato and basil hummus chips in the cupboard, and they're pretty fantastic. Not as good, I don't think, as the figs. We've also got dried figs in there.
Oh man, the figs are great.
They're spectacular. Food in Malta is great on the whole. Just like we've only been here for a day, and we've only actually eaten an oak berry. If you've never had an oak berry and you've got an oak berry near you, this is not an ad. Get an oak berry. As soon as we saw that yesterday, I made the executive decision, and I did try and give Galen. I did sort of pretend that I had a choice for that one meal. It was like,
I knew full well from how you sounded when you spotted the sign, there was no other
I
alternative.
love it. It's basically, for you don't know, it's like basically like an acai bowl, but then it's in a smoothie tub, and I always get like, it's not the biggest one, is it? It's like the second biggest one, but you can get with mine, it's like you can get as many toppings as you want. So it's like purple acai, obviously, with blueberries, and then with like milk powder, peanut butter. I got chia seeds, even though they're a bit spunky. It's pretty fantastic. So if you have an oatbelly, or if you go to like a European city, usually European, although I think I did first get it in Dubai, highly recommend you try an oatbelly. Oh, I would eat that right now. I'd eat the works right now. Oh, I'm very distracted from what we're talking about. Okay, Ashad, is this in my question? How do you just do you? Some of us don't have a choice to do anyone else.
be like, I was gonna give the like advice when you tell someone that's anxious, just don't worry, just stop giving a shit, basically. But genuinely, I think the less you, well, this sounds awful. Like, I get drinking, let me reframe. The less you care about what other people think, the easier it is to do stuff for you.
I agree. I think there's a large element of not caring about what other people think. I also think, what do I think? I think recognizing that people are going to think stuff regardless. Like people are going to look at you, people are not going to look at you, people are going to give you attention, they're not going to give you attention. People are going to judge your decisions one way, people are going to judge your decisions the other way. And actually, I wrote my email about this last week. Gosh, if you're not on my emails, you're really missing out. About that inner knowing and allowing yourself to listen to that kind of quote unquote gut instinct. It's a really hard thing to do when you have spent years and years ignoring it, ignoring your hunger, ignoring your body signals for a rest, ignoring the red flags, ignoring your tiredness of through overworking, through under-exercising, through over-exercising, all of these things that detach us and disembody us and move us away from trusting ourselves. And so I think the more you can do to lean into developing that trust with yourself, body connection, ADPHD event, this is just flowing out of me today. I'm just but like anything you can do to nurture that connection with yourself, be it, be it yoga, be it meditation, body scans, mindful moments within your body, masturbation, anything that allows you to kind of connect with yourself in that way, I think will help you develop a bit more trust in yourself. And as you build trust in yourself, it gets a lot easier to show up as yourself. And of course, there's a big element of people pleasing in this and recognizing people pleasing. And I think recognizing that if you are people pleasing, it's not helpful to anyone. Like I said to you today, it was today. I was like, I'm really proud. I'm trying to like, I'm getting better at not people pleasing. If for example, so we got a wrong coffee order this morning. We asked for two cappuccinos. We got a latte and a cappuccino. And then you were like, I don't mind which one I have. And I was like, I don't really mind either. And then we were like, And then I thought, well, I would actually rather have the cappuccino. And in the past, I would have just been like, oh, you just take what you want. And I was like, actually, no, like, do you know what? I would like the cappuccino. And you were like, great, have the cappuccino. I thought, just little things like that where you're practicing, okay, but this is how I feel, and this is like a non-people pleaser thing to do. Like, not that it made you unhappy. But I think learning to let go of people pleasing and know that it's not serving anyone other than yourself because it makes you feel easier. But like I could have felt better by not saying I'll have the cappuccino. But then if you had the cappuccino, I would have been a bit like, oh. I wanted to come to you. Like, this is a really trivial example, right? Of course, this is a really trivial example, but I think like practicing different ways where you can not like where you can put your own needs first is really important.
Okay, the idea of evidence-based from a peer-reviewed journal with good quality studies, etc., feels reassuring in terms of useful information. But not everyone has access to good journal content, and I feel that we rely on certain people to judge the good studies for us, like health professionals, which is a bit scary unless you really trust someone's ability to judge papers. But there must be loads of things that no one has studied properly. So it feels a bit weird to only follow evidence-based advice because we can't study everything. Part one. Part two. I get all confused about who to trust and what to believe because you get YouTubers who say they're GPs or ex-doctors talking about health and people who work at university who do research doing Michael Mosley's programs. I just don't know whether to believe people or not. My mum believes everything she hears, and I feel like a cynic when I'm like, what good quality paper did you read in order to believe what you just heard?
What a great critical mind you have. That's exactly the way that I would encourage you to approach any information around health with a critical mind. And so you are already excelling in that sense. And I think that's amazing. Whether you can read or have access to scientific journals or not, having a critical mind is key. So that's amazing. You're also completely right. There are professors, you know, who sell shit supplements and probably literally at some point soon, and either cite research that's not necessarily a lie, saying what they say it says, or is a lot weaker or flawed. And it's not just specific people. Like we see this with like diet and mental health research, for example. There's quite a lot of misinformation in that area because the way the research has been conducted. So it's, for example, there's like psychological outcomes that have been measured by nutritionists who don't necessarily fully understand that scientific, what's the word I'm looking for? Don't fully understand how to talk through that, analyze that type of information and present that properly. And it's not necessarily through blame, and then, you know, people like, you know, someone like me might look at psychological research and I have a critical mind, I have a PhD, I know how to read research, but that doesn't mean that I know all about psychological tools and methods. I know about physiological stuff, but even then, I don't know about things like biomechanical stuff, but research. Particularly, I know that I used to be a guinea pig for my friend who did it, and he used to shock me in the leg, but I don't really know much about it. So even people who are, you know, well-intentioned and experienced in one area can talk about research from other areas and be wrong. So you're right. There's lots of misinformation, lots of people intentionally misinforming people, and a lot of people unintentionally misinforming people. I don't think that's a reason to not trust evidence-based practice, but when we look at evidence-based, it's not just the science, it's not just what the research says. An evidence-based practitioner, i.e. the we work at ETPHD, is evidence, yes, then experience. So out of all of the years of work that we've worked with people, for example, who struggle with overeating, this is what we know. Plus, the third component is meeting the individual where they're at. So it doesn't matter if we've worked with thousands of people who struggle with binge eating who found this effective. If the idea of doing that makes you want to rip your skin off, that's not going to be helpful. A kind of good example of this might be something like someone with ADHD, and we're like, oh, just meditate. Just meditate. It's really good. You know, lots of research has looked at, you know, mindfulness meditation over time and binge eating and things like that. And someone with ADHD, not everyone, like lots of people with ADHD enjoy meditation, but they're often it can be quite tricky. So we have to look at things like other ways of practicing mindfulness. And it might be active mindfulness, it might be different types of meditation, etc. Right. The evidence is becoming more and more clear here, but there haven't been those types of mindfulness interventions in people with ADHD and struggle with binge eating. There may be a little bit, but not, it's not robust, right? So there's no clear-cut answer, unfortunately, in any of this stuff. And it's I think it's helpful to keep an open mind, and I have friends who are very, very hard science ruled. I have friends who are very not hard science field, and I love them both, and I love pers I say both there I've got many friends in you know on the full spectrum, and I take all of their opinion.
Just kidding, I've got many friends.
If I tell people enough times, it will come true, right? I think if you take the opinions of different people, not on board, but just listen and be curious about it. You know, do a bit of research yourself if you have access to that, however that looks for you, whether it be scientific research or what someone that you do trust has said, or online searches that cite evidence and having a look. And to keep a critical mind, that's all you can really do, unfortunately. It's very frustrating. Okay. Feeling affected and or uncomfortable when others talk about the food they are eating or the workouts they are doing and how to deal with it. One of my friends is getting very into the gym and going 4 or 5 times a week, and it's making me feel bad that I'm not, even though I know what other people do has no impact or reflection on me. I've also seen quite a few things on Instagram about eating varied meals with lots of colour and texture to support health, not feeling hungry, etc. And again, I know not every single thing online is aimed at me at all or applicable to me, but I'm still finding myself bothered by them or feeling like I should be doing something different.
I think I would start trying to understand what it is about those things that is making you feel so uncomfortable. Like, why do you feel that you should be doing the same as what your friend is doing? Like, what's the narrative behind it? Likewise with food. Like, are you currently moving your body in a way that works for you and supports your health? Are you currently eating in a way that works for you and supports your health and relationship with food? If you are, then that's fantastic. And I know how difficult it can be, like when those close to you are talking about what you do. And obviously we've got loads of podcast episodes that talk about boundaries. And I think maybe that might be something to have a conversation about too, just so that you can feel more comfortable and confident in your own choices.
Yeah, and some of this will come also from the stuff that we were saying earlier about, developing that trust in yourself to know that this is the right thing. And over time, the more that strengthens, the easier it is to kind of go, oh, that's interesting that you're doing that, and not let it penetrate into your energy. It's really common to want to do more or to do something else. Sometimes that happens because like we're uncomfortable with what we're doing. And for example, if you are working with Roz and maybe she's saying, okay, I want you to just sit with this discomfort of doing things this way. And then you see this other way of doing things. Of course, that's going to be like, oh, maybe I could do that because it takes away some of this discomfort of what you're trying to do at the moment. And so that's totally, totally understandable. And I think with the comparison thing, maybe look at what stories you're telling yourself about that. So and kind of journal through them. So, okay, my friend's going to the gym 5 times a week and now I feel bad that I'm not. Okay, well, what am I telling myself about that? I should be going 5 times a week. Okay, is that thought or is that fact? It's thought because fact is I don't physically have the time, or I'm recovering from a disordered relationship with exercise, or I can't recover from doing 5 sessions a week, and actually I fall into like diminishing returns when I think about, the law of diminishing returns, doing more and more, and actually I end up getting negative output as a result. Or I'm concentrating on getting the best results from the smallest amount of volume because that allows me to recover and balance every other value and goal that I have in my life all at once, which is a really hard thing to do. And just journal yourself through this, and that using that journal prompt of the story that I'm telling myself is. It's going to be so helpful here because it's your friend going to the gym 5 times a week is not what's bothering you. It hasn't, like you said, it's amazing. Like, it's no impact on what you should do. It's not the act of her or him or them going to the gym 5 times a week. It's the story that you're telling yourself about them going to the gym 5 times a week. And then, unpacking that is like, is that thought or is that fact? And is that, if that's fact, is there something I want to change about that? Is that, if it's thought, what is causing me to think like that? How can I reframe that, etc.?
I feel like there's a bit of a theme with the questions this week. How to actually know what's best for you and how to decide what you actually need. Example, I have taken some stress leave for 2 days, but doctor said do a week. But I'm worried if I don't go back, it will be worse for me in the long run with workload. I struggle to make decisions like this in lots of areas as I'm worried about how it will impact my future self.
Are you worried about how it will impact your future self, or are you genuinely considering your future self? If you're thinking about your future self, let's think about this logically. Is going back genuinely going to support your future self, or is go like earlier, or is it going back earlier actually going to impact your future self because you're exhausted for longer, or you're iller for longer, for example? Try not to think of your future self of like your 10 years in advance future self. Sometimes that can be quite helpful, but think of your tomorrow self. Think of your end of week self. Think of your next Monday self when you want to go back to work fully recovered and rested, and how you're going to show up in that way versus how you'd show up if you weren't supposed to go back and you went back. When we think of our future self like long term, we think of them as our as a stranger, and there's evidence to support that. But when we think of our future self like tomorrow or next week, we can still see it as ourselves. And so it's much easier to make helpful decisions for ourselves, for our future self in a few days, as opposed to our future self in 5 years.
Yeah, and I think well, I'm sure we both can. I can fully relate to, yeah, but like, why would I, when I've got so much to do, I'll have so much to catch up on. But when you are in that kind of stressed, exhausted state, just as are right now, not working as efficiently as you can be, and actually maybe taking that full week off means that you come back, you're well rested, you're more energized, cognition better, right? Okay, I can crack on, and actually I can get through it a lot more easily, a lot more efficiently than I ever thought possible.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. Dealing with boredom at work when popping out for a walk is an issue.
Can you take any other kind of breaks? I mean, there's going to be some boredom at work, and I think having acceptance of that, like, not everything about your job is likely going to make you super excited to show up all of the time. But can you take, I don't know, other movement breaks at work? Can you even just, if it's possible, get to a window and some fresh air and a bit of, let's say, sunlight? Let's be honest, okay, if you are UK based, there's been a lot of sunlight recently. I think anything that can help to change mood, change energy a little bit, like having a playlist. I've been talking to clients recently about like rhythmic activities that just help to kind of give your brain something to occupy on, and it can be quite like, it's a self-soothing technique as well, and stress balls and things like
Stress balls.
that.
I think honestly, kind of what you were saying at the beginning, you're going to be bored sometimes. Going for a walk when you're at work is not probably going to be the most exciting thing. Yes, you could add podcasts, like ours, or funny podcasts, or fiction audiobook. When I get bored walking, I'll do something like that. So there are simple things to do to add some joy into that experience, but also boredom can be really helpful. And actually, like boredom can help you give you space to look inwards and figure out what's going on for you in this moment. It also helps to foster creativity, and something that I'll talk a lot to coaches about is spending time doing nothing. There's a reason that you get some of your best ideas in the shower. It's one of the few times you don't do anything. And maybe your walk at work is the only time you're not doing anything in the day. Let's lean into that and think, okay, well, maybe it will help me come up with new ideas for work. Or maybe it'll help me come up with the thing that I'm going to bake this weekend. Or maybe it'll help me come up with a really fun idea for date night. Or plan an outfit in your head. Well, I don't know what creativity looks like for you. But I think there's a quote, and I was trying to find it, but And I, but I can't remember who said it, and I can't remember where it was. So that was really useful piece of information. But there's a quote, something around like the importance of being able to be bored. It's probably Oliver Berkman, let's be honest. He probably said it in 4,000 Weeks, let's be honest. But I do think there's something to be said for people who are able to feel bored. It's like endurance runners. Like the mindset of endurance runners to me is like, a whole other level of, you're 20 miles into a run, you've got just got music on, if that, and you're not in a beautiful place to look at, and you're still going. Your brains are like, oh, what, like wowzers. You can just deal with that boredom, and I think that people probably get quite a lot from that, to be quite honest.
Again, not helpful in any way because I can't remember where I heard it, but it was something around like when you're so used to feeling overwhelmed, boredom feel like boredom, like it's because it's underwhelmed because we're so used to overwhelm and overstimulation that like, and that for me was like, oh, that's yeah, maybe I need to, like you said, lean into allowing myself to be a little bit bored because. Like I still have to catch myself up. If I'll be sitting, chances are I'll still be scrolling my phone. I'm like, why don't you just not and see what happens?
Absolutely. Okay, I think we're gonna stop it there. Keep your questions coming in. They are fantastic. We love them. I'm only stopping it like 2 minutes early because I want a fig. And listen, the baby wants a fig. So I'm really sorry if you listen to this podcast, but if the baby wants a fig, baby wants a fig. It's the way that it has to be now. Called values aligned action. Still, so I'll try it. Okay, Kieran coming in. Thank you. Thank you, Anna.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, if you did, please do feel free to like, share, subscribe, and review. And if you would like to chat to me, then you can find details of my Instagram in the show notes.